Hey there, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Film Room Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Proctor. I'm here with my co-host, Dylan Olson. And in this show, we break down the game of college football and give you a quick listen scouting report to give you everything you'll need to know each week as your favorite college football team buckles up their chin straps. Listen in and level up. The Film Room is your weekly game plan. All right, Dylan. Welcome to the beginning of the second round of the college football playoff and our film review of the Alamo Bowl. Number 17, BYU defeating number 23, Colorado, 36-14. Dylan, how you doing this week?
Pretty good, man. Really good after the weekend.
That's right. We had a very fortunate, favorable outcome for those of us that are Cougar fans. We had what was set up to be a really good matchup between BYU and Colorado. It was a highly touted game, kind of an interesting game that featured, I guess, what we'd call a Pac-12 legacy team in Colorado versus a new Big 12 team. In BYU, this is one of the games. I'd say probably one of the top games that featured teams that were just left out of the college football playoff. I think the other game that I think of the most of teams that were kind of on the cusp was I forget which bowl game. Or was it it was the Pop-Tart Bowl.
How could you forget the Pop-Tart ripping the wrapper off?
Like that's right. That's right.
A combination of Superman and the alien from Aliens.
Yeah, the Pop-Tart Bowl between Iowa State and Miami. I will say this: of all the bowl games this year, of all the bowl games of the last couple of years, I think this one is the one that's marketed the best. But I literally went over to Smith's Marketplace and bought like 8 boxes of Pop-Tarts.
8 boxes.
Well, I wanted to kind of have some variation, you know, to like let people try different flavors. But I haven't bought Pop-Tarts in like a couple years, and they got me to buy several boxes. So
that's pretty funny.
But that, I think that game between Iowa State and Miami was another game that featured two teams that were very, very heavily favored or you know, projected to have been college football playoff teams, and so and both of them I thought were good games. You know, I think BYU showed they had a really good showing. We'll talk about this more in depth. I think this game could have been more of a blowout than it was. It should have been more of a blowout than it was.
But
BYU played, I think they played just pretty good. They had a couple big mistakes, but anyway. Overall, Dylan, what were your thoughts about the game?
So first off, ESPN, you got to do better, man.
Oh my gosh, it's so bad.
I didn't even have my volume on, but I saw so many people, including non-BYU fans, who were just like, some of them were almost like embarrassed for the commentators because it was so clear that the only thing they were prepared for was for Colorado to win this game.
Yeah.
And they were only ready to talk about Colorado all night. And it was just like, I don't know. I mean, this would be hard to fact check, but I saw a dude repost something from ESPN that was like an all caps post of Travis Hunter's touchdown highlights. And that person was like, this is the first highlight they've posted of this game. And I'm like,
yeah,
I find that hard to believe, but also like, that was basically what it was like. It was like BYU scores a punt return touchdown, and they're like, oh, yeah, Travis Hunter. I don't know if that's actually what happened, but that's what it felt like was happening.
I was kind of tracking that live because I was curious to see if there was a bias as well. And to their credit, they were posting some good BYU highlights. And to be honest, there were a couple of Colorado highlights they could have shown early on. But they didn't.
I saw was hyperbole then, which I'm glad
that was the case. A little bit. But the one thing we did notice is, and I will preface this by saying I'm a Chiefs fan by marriage, I enjoy Patrick Mahomes as a player. The quarterback documentary kind of turned me off to him a little bit, just with his personality. But it reminds me of those videos that are really popular right now on all like the NFL meme pages, where it's like the great and mighty Mahomo. Like he threw an interception, but he pinned him deep, and it was like the greatest thing ever. Like they only ever have good things to say about the players that they think make the best stories. No matter if it was a great play or a horrible play.
Yeah.
You know, like they went on and on about how well Travis Hunter played on defense, but they, like, totally glazed by. In fact, I think you texted me about it. There was one play where BYU had a huge gain on a crossing route in the middle, and Travis Hunter just whiffed on a tackle. Like, totally let the guy run right by him. And just there were lots of plays I felt like that happened that they could have been like, oh, that wasn't too great of a play by this player, or wasn't too great of a play by that play. They're just on and on about, oh, he's going to go so high in the draft. It's unfortunate they have to end this way. It's like, how about you talk about some of the positive play on the other side of the ball?
Well, it was kind of crazy, too, because I saw like the review article from ESPN at the end. The review of the game was, despite the loss at the Valero Alamo Bowl, Travis Hunter and Shedeur Sanders made a massive impact at Colorado. And I'm like,
yeah.
I'm like, there's just no freaking way. Like, that is something that you can post in a week, you know? When it's like, okay, Colorado season is done and it's over and they can kind of just do their thing, right? And move on, and then you can say that because they did. They did have a huge impact, which I looked, by the way, Travis Hunter is the second Colorado player to win a Heisman, so I'm glad I didn't I don't bet, but I'm glad I didn't place a bet on that. So
right.
But I'm just like, you got to be kidding me, man. Like, I do think Shedeur Sanders is a pretty good quarterback. I don't know how he's going to fare in the NFL. I am really bad at, like, evaluating that kind of talent on an NFL level. But the fact is, BYU's defense made him look like not even close to what he has been all year, right?
Yeah.
And I
guess it's possible that they just had an off night.
It is possible.
I think it's really telling, though. I think you shared some stats with us today. There was a tweet that you sent to us, but it was something along the lines of, you know, in the 2 years that Dion has been the head coach of Colorado, they're like 0-5 against top 25 ranked teams.
Oh.
And then they're like 2-9 versus teams in a Power 4 conference that have a record above 500.
Yeah. And
it's just like, I mean, it's really awesome that they were able to turn around their season from the year before Dion. They went 1-11 or something like that. And then they had like a 6 or 7 win season last year. I forget how many games they won, but it was you know, at least a 50% turnaround. And then this year, like a pretty great turnaround. Like they ended up, you know, 9-4, which is an impressive turnaround. But I still think the bigger story was BYU's turnaround from being, you know,
5-7.
Being 5-7, not bowl eligible last
year. Picked to be 13th.
Picked to be almost dead last in the conference. And tied for first. They just lost the tiebreaker.
Yeah. You know? It's just crazy because I'm just like, you guys, you got to be more responsible than this. It's not that they did have an impact on Colorado, right? And Colorado had a good season. I mean, how many times has Colorado had a 9-win season? You know, in the last 2 decades, like not a whole lot. So that's great.
Yeah.
But it's just, to me, it was just like, it was just like, to me, you just lose so much credibility when you do that. And so to me, I'm like, I mean, I've already been out on ESPN soccer analysis. Like, I just think they're clowns, but it's really hard to take anything seriously when you see like that it's at best bad and at worst just shamelessly biased, right? And so that's kind of, that was where I was kind of frustrated. But as far as the game goes, I mean, you know, the real reason we're doing this, BYU, So we talked about a few things last week that they needed to do, and I think they did most of those things. They ran the ball well. They dominated on defense. They forced a couple turnovers. They actually didn't take care of the ball super well.
No, they didn't.
So a couple of things that they did do, though, that we didn't talk about. So those first three were the big ones. Defense, turnovers, ran the ball well. Something they did that we didn't talk about was special teams and third down efficiency. And then I think that they did a good job keeping them out of the red zone. I wasn't really able to find stats on that because I wasn't able to see it necessarily, but I'm just thinking about it and I'm like, I just don't feel like Colorado was in scoring opportunity, part of the field very often. So,
When you look at their first half offensively, you know, their first series ended on a failed fourth down conversion, a three and out, missed field goal, punt return for a touchdown, and then a punt. And then they came out after the half and threw an interception. They finally got a touchdown to their Heisman winner, who, you know, I will give him this, he is very fast. He's very quick. But it's just a bad tackle by a backup safety, Raider DeMooney, who's filling in for Crew Wakely, who went into the transfer portal. Yeah. And then after that, they went punt, interception, touchdown. So, by all means, a very, very poor showing. You know, I think 14-0 almost gives them too much credit. 14 points on the board almost feels like it gives them too much credit.
Yeah, I mean,
in my mind, at least.
BYU had, listen to this. Colorado had 9 first downs, and they were 3 for 9 on third down. BYU had 22 first downs, and were 8 for 14 on third down.
Yeah, it's pretty offensively awesome.
Yeah, for sure.
And when you look at that, that's with the BYU's first series of the game, they had to punt. On the first play, they went 3 and out. But on the first play, they had a wide open, 70-yard post, and Jake just didn't lead his receiver. He threw the ball behind him. So there's 7 points you missed out on there. Then on your third series, you have a trick play, the reverse, or the kind of the jet sweep double pass. Parker Kingston was trying to throw to our tight end Taase, and it's in his hands, and he drops it, so we have to kick a field goal. So there's another 4 points there. So there's an 11-point difference. Then the next series, after our field goal, we kick the onside kick, and we get the ball, the surprise onside, right? We go down, we drive down to the
It was right around the 30, I think.
37-yard line.
Okay.
And then Gary Bohannon throws an interception in the red zone. So it wasn't necessarily – we weren't in the red zone, but, the ball was – very easily thrown into the red zone. Actually, it was intercepted on the 4-yard line or something like that. So there's another 7 points. So there's, 18 points that you miss out on.
I thought Bohannon was a receiver, by the way.
Yeah, no, he was was either in on the play as a running back or as a running quarterback.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to remember the play because I think Jake handed the ball off to him, mm-hmm. and he kind of loops around and Jake kind of runs out. And I was thinking, is this a receiver or something? And then it was no, that was Gary Bohannon. And I was telling people it wasn't a quarterback who threw that interception. And I'm it was a quarterback, just not our starting quarterback. Yeah. So that was kind of funny. But
then the next series was the one where we had the screen pass gone wrong, or the shovel pass gone wrong. We're literally just outside the red zone, right? So, if we score on that play, that goes from 18 points to 25 points. Okay.
You're talking that we've left on the table. Okay.
That we've left on the table. Then Jake had another easy interception that he shouldn't have thrown. At the beginning of the end of the third quarter, we're literally on their 18-yard line.
Yeah, red zone interception.
And he picks it off on the 1-yard line, he picks it off on the goal line. So there's 25. So there's 32 points that you've left on the board. Like, we very easily could have scored in the 70s.
Yeah.
This game.
And I mean, and I was kind of like, oh, I bet you score about 50, because maybe not all of those you end up with 7 points. Some of them you probably should have, like a couple of balls that were thrown.
Say you only convert half of them. Say you only convert half of those. It's 52 to 14.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, yeah, it could have been an absolute, like, I mean, they got embarrassed. It could have been an absolute, just like, I mean, cat playing with its food kind of thing, you know, where it's just like, oh my word. So I counted, even though one of those was technically out of the red zone, I did count it as two red zone turnovers for my notes. Cause I was like, you know, like you said, dropped balls, you know, just a couple where it's like, I mean, the onside kick thing was crazy. I was like, oh my gosh, we're about to go up
again. I was so stoked.
And then it was like, oh great. Which that was kind of weird. I don't know. Maybe I'm getting too picky, but I was kind of like, to Aaron Roderick, I'm like, hey man, like, maybe just run the ball, because we're doing that really well. You know, like,
I will say this. I did enjoy, you know, like, with how, I think just with this being a bowl game that didn't really particularly matter, I really enjoyed that Aaron Roderick was like, let's go out there and have some fun with it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, let's go give people a show. If we lose the game, like, doesn't much matter.
I like that, like, Bohannon got to get in there and run the ball, and he looked pretty good.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. I totally agree.
So
I liked it quite a lot. I thought it was really awesome. I thought it was fun to watch the boys ball out. It was fun to watch basically all of our starters come out and play well. It was bittersweet for me, because on the one hand, I was looking at this team and saying, like, these guys far surpassed everything we expected from them this season. And I didn't think that we were being overly harsh in our preseason predictions. And we'll talk more about, you know, the whole year overview in the next episode for BYU and for Utah, for that matter.
Yeah.
But like, they far exceeded our, I thought, very reasonable expectations for them this year. And so I'm super happy for them. I'm also, it's so bittersweet, because you watch them play that well against a team that I still would say, I think Colorado is a bit overrated, but I still think they're a good football team. And like that's the type of beatdown that you would expect an Oregon to put on Colorado. That's the type of beatdown you would expect, you know,
Ohio State,
Penn State. I'd say it's, you know, I think Ohio State and Georgia, those types of teams, they do come through and put down, you know, 50 or 60 points on a team like that against Colorado. You know, they probably don't have all those miscues, but, like, I think you take a lot of these teams that are in the playoff, and I think you hold BYU right up next to them and say, you know, gosh, you played pretty mediocrely. You left 32 points on the board, and you still won 36 to 14. Like, that's a pretty good beatdown. So it's just a little bittersweet knowing, like, how it could have been.
Yeah. So I did want to say a couple other things real quick, just in terms of, like, kind of important points of the game. I think the first one was BYU's pass rush, which we did talk about. They had 4 sacks, and they were at very opportune times where,
yes,
3rd and long, you're, you know, or 2nd and 8, you're giving them a 3rd and 15. That's like, okay, that's going to be a tough one to convert. Especially, dude, I don't know if you noticed this, but to me, the DBs looked ravenous, dude. They were flying into tackles. Like, even just there were, like, swing routes and 1 yard outs and stuff where guys are, like, technically catching it behind the line of scrimmage, and the DBs were just, like, flying in there making tackles. And I was very impressed. But yeah, they seem to get those sacks at good times. And then one of the other notes I had was special teams, dude. Parker Kingston had 105 punt return yards. slash kick returner.
I can confidently say I think he's one of the better punt returners I've seen, not just at BYU or at Utah. Like, I'd say he's up there with like the best returners I've seen in all of college football.
Dude, he could.
I mean,
he could, like, that could be a way for him to carve a little spot onto an NFL roster.
I totally agree. He's like Britton Covey, honestly.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, he's not very big. He's about the same size as Britton. He's actually about 10 pounds heavier than Britton, and about two or three inches taller. But he averages 15. Sorry, those are his receiving yards. I'll have to try to see how many yards he averages on his punt returns.
Yeah.
But it's impressive. It seems like he is able to gain at least 10 yards on every punt return. Very, very seldom does he catch a punt and go nowhere.
Yeah, and that is such a weapon. So, I mean, for this game, he averaged 26.2 yards per return. So, obviously, that's inflated because he had the... I mean, that punt return that he had was like a 55 to 60 yarder, right? I feel like it was right around midfield. But, I mean, still, that means he's... If you take that one away, he's still getting like... you know, 15, 16 yards of return. That's just really impressive. And then the other thing is Will Farron kicked two 50-plus yard field goals, including a 54-yarder right before half to go up 20-0, and he was 3-for-3. That is also like special teams, it's so easy to get pedestrian and like...
Yeah, yeah.
To overlook it, but you can create so much value in a football game by one big special teams play, you know? And so it's just,
I'm looking forward to see where Will Farron goes.
Yeah, me too.
Like, I think he gets drafted for sure. He's a great kicker. He's got the leg. I mean, he's pretty lights out. Like, he hasn't missed a whole lot of kicks. And when he has missed them, he hasn't missed them by very much. You know, I think he could definitely go somewhere in the league.
He's got poise, man.
Well, he definitely does. He could probably fill out a little bit more.
Yeah.
You know, he's got a pretty tall frame. He could put some meat on the bones a little bit, but got some meat on those bones, baby. Come on.
Yeah. So I guess, and I think my last note in terms of like the actual game analysis kind of was, I will say Dion after the game said, I'm paraphrasing a little bit here, but he said, quote, "Wonderful job to BYU. Or by BYU, they're well coached. They did a phenomenal job of running the ball. Special teams kicked our butts, you know, dot, dot, dot." And then he goes on and also says, "They played a heck of a football game. If I'm going to get my butt kicked, I'd rather get my butt kicked by that coach, Kalani Sitake. I love him to life, man. He's a good man." And that's just really cool.
I thought that was an interesting phrase. I love him to life, as opposed to like I love him to death.
Yeah, I think it has to do with I think it's something he probably relates to his Christianity, because I think Dion's a pretty strong Christian, if I remember right.
That's cool.
I think now I'm like, oh, I don't want to. I hope I'm not sticking my foot in my mouth.
No, that would make sense.
Yeah. So let's see here. Yeah, Deion Sanders vocal about his Christian faith is a headline. The first headline that came up. Last year, so I imagine it's probably the same. But anyway, I think so. Understandably so, I think it's really easy to like jump on a Coach Dion and be like, "Oh, he's so annoying, and he's doing this," and then look at he's just like using this for his kids, and he's dragging all his players from here. But I think, and that makes sense. He's showy. He's, you know, that's what he was in the league as one of the best DBs ever. He's got swagger, he's got attitude, he's got, you know, confidence. And so and with everything going on with Colorado and the hype and, you know, his two sons playing, I get why it's annoying. But I think at his core, I think Dion is a good dude. And it was cool to hear him say that about Kalani Sitake and about BYU. I think that was really cool. So anyway, so, okay, I have something for you that I think is really interesting, unless you had any other notes on the game itself.
Nope. Okay. No, that's all I had.
Okay. So BYU finish 11-2. So this is their 13th time with 11 or more wins in a season.
That actually surprises me.
Only seven teams have more seasons with 11 wins or more.
Really?
Than BYU do. It's Alabama, Oklahoma, Ohio State, Penn State, Florida State, Georgia, and USC.
I thought Michigan would have been in there.
No, surprising me, because I think Michigan actually has the most, well, counting national championships in college football is really hard, but I think Michigan has the most or one of the top, like, three or four. But I think a lot of them came early on when college football was, you know, 8 to 10 games a season.
Gotcha.
So, but I did see this. 4-1, BYU's 4-1 against Sagarin top 30 teams this year. Sagarin is just an advanced rankings that you think would, you think they have a little bit more thought and calculation to them. So
right.
They beat, and these are the Sagarin ratings I'm giving when I say it before each team, but they beat 17 SMU, they beat number 23 Colorado, they beat number 25 Baylor and number 27 Kansas State, and then they lost to number 11 ASU. Those rankings may have been the rankings before the bowl game, so I'm not positive. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is only one of those games was at home, which I think is really impressive.
I think they played really well on the road this year.
Yeah.
All things considered, except for maybe the ASU game to start. But when you look at it, even the ASU game,
it was a close
came
game.
Down to the wire.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Anyway. And then I just wanted to say, BYU, you pay Jay Hill. You figure out what you got to do to pay that guy.
Yeah. You got to keep that guy here.
Yeah. I saw something on X that he was like, I think they threw like 17 different looks at Colorado's offense just in the first half.
Really?
And then they only repeated some of those looks like a handful of times. So I think he just went absolutely crazy. I mean, you know, they had 2 or 3 weeks to prepare. So, but, anyway, I just thought it was really cool. And then, trying to think anyway. So yeah. Okay. No, I already covered that. So I just think, strong season to BYU, and you're going to look back with fondness, but there will always be in the back of your mind that little what if. What if they beat? Because even if they beat Kansas and lose to ASU twice, they're in, man. They're in. Because at that point, it's a head-to-head with SMU. You got the win. BYU's in, you know? So.
Yeah, just these tiny little mistakes, and I feel like lots of recency bias from the college football folks.
Yeah.
Which either they way, said though, they weren't going to do, but they totally did.
Yeah, they always do. But I think it was a great season. So just real quick for the Big 12. Big 12's 4-3 right now in bowl games, with one of their losses being like Big 12 on Big 12 matchup. But K-State managed to pull back the win against the mighty Rutgers.
They did. I was shocked. I saw they were down, and I thought it was a lost cause, so I turned it off. And then all of a sudden, I looked at the score later and was very happily surprised.
They were down 12 points in the fourth quarter, so unfortunately, Texas Tech lost to Arkansas, who lost to Oklahoma State, who didn't beat anyone in the Big 12 this year, although they came really close to beating BYU.
They did.
So I don't know if you saw it, but there was an ugly play where the Arkansas offensive lineman stomped on someone's ankle after the play.
I did see that. I think you sent that to me. That was really gnarly.
I'm like, get out of here, man. I saw multiple videos of that dude. I saw a video of, there was a guy who hurt his ankle and he was literally one-legged hopping off the field. And that same lineman shoved the dude in the shoulder pads and knocked him over. And I'm like, what are you doing, dude? Like, that's just like, no excuse for that.
There's no room for that.
Yeah,
there's
no room
for that in the game.
TCU beat Louisiana, and by beat I mean absolutely like smoked them,
demolished.
Yeah. Then we talked about the Pop-Tarts Bowl, and then obviously Pop-Tarts. BYU with Alamo. So the only one we have is Baylor versus LSU, and that is tomorrow night. So
that'll be exciting.
Yeah, and then after that, I didn't do nearly as much detail. Do we want to just do a quick, like, here's the matchup, here's what we think is going to happen, or here's the key to the game for these four college football playoff games?
Let's start with the first game that's going to happen tomorrow night and take place tomorrow night at 5:30. This is number 6 seeded Penn State versus number 3 seeded Boise State.
Okay.
Penn State is just coming off of a win
over Indiana.
That's what I was going to say. Indiana was Notre Dame.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Sorry, Penn State smoked SMU.
That's who it was. Gosh. Can you remember? Yes, so Penn State just coming off of a win over SMU. Boise State has had plenty of time to kind of relax and recover since it won the Mountain West Conference Championship over UNLV on December 6th. They won that game 21-7, which is a closer win than I thought it was going to be, but I think that maybe kind of speaks levels to the talent that they've had at UNLV this year, especially considering their quarterback issue they had, where they had their really talented starting quarterback who entered the transfer portal, or just like he just quit because UNLV wasn't paying him the NIL deal that they had promised him.
Okay. So speaking of quitting, Cam Ward, dude. Left.
Yeah, I don't know what that's about.
Just saying, all right, I'm done at halftime. That's brutal, man.
It sounds like that was kind of the plan, though, for him. Like, I'll play in one half, and then, you know.
That's still, like.
His game was totally in it. Or his team was totally in the game, you know. Well, it wasn't like he was stopping because they were down.
If I was a teammate, I'd be like, bro, it's 31-28. This is a close game, and we're playing well. Like, why don't you stick it out? I don't know.
Well, all things considered, they continue to play well even without him.
That means he did it for the. Was he trying to set a record? Is that what it was?
Yeah. Which he did, and then he stopped.
Yeah, that sounds like that's probably what he was doing. And I guess in my mind, I'm like, play the whole game or don't play it at all. But half the game feels kind of like a – I mean, that just feels like it's putting your team in hot water. But anyway, sorry. So Boise beat UNLV. So,
yep, Boise beat UNLV. Penn State's coming off of their win against SMU in the first round of the college football playoff. And then before that, having lost to Oregon – in the Big Ten championship game. So as of right now, the ESPN matchup predictor has Penn State at a 65% likelihood of winning this game.
Okay.
The game odds are currently favored towards Boise State, or excuse me, Penn State, -450. And the spread... Right so now,
I checked.
It's 11.5 in favor of Penn State.
That was So to me, it's actually interesting. College Football Insiders actually has Penn State with a 78% chance to win, and I was like, oh man. Which is interesting because Boise's metrics actually stack up decently, but I just don't think they've faced a team as physical as Penn State. So to me, this comes down to like, can Janty keep being Janty? And can Boise's defense hold out once or twice? And if they can do those two things, maybe force a turnover without giving up the ball, I think they can win this game. But I think it's ultimately so. Well, I mean, I think Penn State's going to win. I picked 31-24. I picked Boise to cover because I really want them to do well in this game. So
yeah,
I am honestly though. To me, I'm like. I don't know. I don't know if Boise's defense is just going to be completely outclassed by the physicality of Penn State and their size. I don't know. So we'll see what happens there. But
yeah, I personally think, you know, I'm looking at the Boise that went down to the wire with Oregon.
Yeah.
They lost by 3. I think Boise can totally do it. They've had plenty of time to get rested. You know, by the time they play this game, it's going to have been almost a month. You know, plenty of time for their injured guys to get healthy. Plenty of time for them, the guys that weren't injured, just they're just tired. to get well rested, to get their minds right. I think that the Mountain West is a certain step down in a level of competition. But I think that Boise has been a quality program in that conference for nigh on two decades now.
Well, and that's Boise's kind of MO traditionally, is like, overlook us at your own peril, you know?
Uh-huh. Plus, how can you not pull for Boise in the Fiesta Bowl?
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, I know that lots of Utah fans, we kind of get sour about Boise kind of stealing our thunder because, like, we were the original Bowl Busters, but we got kind of a bad draw in 2004, 2005 against number 21 ranked Pitt. We didn't really get to play anybody that would have really, you know, made headlines. And so Boise comes in, I think, the next year or the year after that, and, you know, beats Oklahoma in this really stunning, amazing fashion and kind of steals our thunder. But you got to respect just the amazing history that Boise State has in these huge bowl games.
Plus there's the fake field goal against Oregon, right? Like,
uh-huh.
Back in like 2007 or 8.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to say Boise State. I think Ashton Janci does his thing. I think Boise's quarterback, he's quite talented too. He has 2,700 yards passing on the season and he only has 3 interceptions.
Wow, okay.
Which is not very many, you know, compared to Penn State's quarterback. His name is Drew Aller. I can't remember his first name, Drew Aller. He has 21 touchdowns and 7 interceptions. So fewer touchdown passes, more interceptions. He has about 300 yards more passing yards. But I think that, you know, Boise State stacks up pretty well against Penn State. So I'm going to go ahead and put my chips in for the Broncos over the Nittany Lions. I'm going to say 31-23.
I love it, Boise State. I love it.
Yeah.
I'm rooting for Boise big time in this
one. I am too. They are probably the team that I want to win the most.
I think I'd agree with you.
The next game that I am going to be rooting very hard for will be Texas versus Arizona State the next morning at 11 a.m. on New Year's Day. We have the fifth-ranked Texas Longhorns playing against fifth-seeded Texas Longhorns versus the fourth-seeded Arizona State Sun Devils. I still am so torn about which team I would like to win this game. I don't really feel any sort of way about Texas. I know you do. You have these deep ties to Texas, but for me, my cheering factor still comes down to whether or not I want the Big 12 to shine, or whether I'm still sour over the way that the BYU ASU game ended.
Well, I'll tell you what. Something about Texas. Everyone.
What's that?
Everyone should, at the very least, appreciate Texas for Vince Young in 2005 for bringing down USC.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
That alone, people should at least appreciate him a tiny bit.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
And I guess this would kind of be like backwards cheering and rooting in a way, because if I could know who was going to win the game following this one, the Ohio State-Oregon game, if Ohio State ends up beating Oregon, I would love for Texas to have won.
Yeah.
Because I think that's the better matchup. I think if Arizona State goes up against Ohio State, I think it's going to be a blowout.
Yeah.
But if Oregon wins, I think that an Arizona State-Oregon matchup could be quite fun, kind of like an old Pac-12 matchup. Again, I think Cam Scataboo, I very much look forward to watching him play football. And I think, you know, just for the sake of our good buddy Jake Kelso, we mention him every time ASU plays, it'd be kind of fun, I think, to, like, don the Sun Devil cap and root for Cam Scataboo as opposed to always rooting against him and, like, knowing you can do nothing about it.
Yeah, so for me, I'm kind of torn because the whole, you know, there's a little bit of bad blood, and then the Sam Levitt said something. There's the Dallin right. Levitt family and stuff, right? That's annoying. And I was like, oh, Sam's pretty fine. But Sam said something today, and I don't know, maybe I'm taking it the wrong way, but he was very much like, oh yeah, well, I'm going to show him the better quarterback, and I'm this and I'm that and blah, blah, blah. And they asked Quinn Ewers, and Quinn Ewers was like, yeah, ASU's awesome. They've been doing great stuff this year. I've got to catch a few games. Levitt's really good. Like, it's going to be a good, it's going to be fun. And I just like yeah. seeing, and maybe it's the juxtaposition of that that made me see it that way. But I was kind of like, ah, ultimately I'm rooting for ASU because I'm rooting against the committee.
Right.
So
yeah, you're rooting against the bias of the SEC and the Big Ten bias.
Yeah. So, and I think that, Texas moves through, you know, I'll be rooting for them because I lived in Austin and I grew to like Texas. But I think this comes down to Scataboo versus Texas defense, which their rush defense is like the one not totally elite category for their defense. But they're going to have to be – ASU will have to be good in their runs in the red zone. And I think it's going to be close. Ultimately, like I said, I'm rooting for ASU here, but I think – they're not quite going to be able to check off the long list of boxes that they're going to have to do to win this game, you know, as in like take care of the ball, be efficient, mm-hmm. be good in the red zone, get to the red zone. And so I'm calling Texas wins 16-14 in a very physical defensive
close.
Game.
Yeah. Close game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the biggest part of this game is going to be, and we talked about this when both BYU and Utah were prepping to play ASU. Everyone knows that Cam Scataboo is going to be their number one offensive option.
Yeah.
Everyone knows that Sam Levitt can run. He can make things happen with his feet and with his arm. When it comes down to it, Jordan Tyson is like your biggest receiving threat.
And he's out.
And he's kind of the, he's, and he, oh, is he out?
I can't remember. I thought he was out.
I wasn't aware of that.
Let me check.
If that's true, that's especially a huge issue. Because I was just about to say, he's really your only receiving option. I mean, granted, you've got a couple of good athletes there. It's not like ASU doesn't have good athletes because they're a Division One.
He's not expected to play. I will say, I mean, a good pass defense. They're not quite on the level of Texas, but Texas is truly elite. But I mean, ASU shredded Iowa State's pass defense without Jordan Tyson, so you never know. But
that's true. Yeah, they not to say they don't have options. They definitely have. Like I said, they're a Division One, you know, Power Four college football program. They're going to have athletes, but they haven't had anyone so far this year that has really stood out as much as Jordan Tyson. So, in order to do anything against Texas and to free up the field for Cam Scataboo, they're going to have to find some other options. And Sam Levitt's going to have to make something work with his feet. He's going to have to do some stuff with his arm.
He's going to have to be smart with the ball.
I mean, you want to be able to rely on Cam Scataboo by having a good balanced offense. If you can't get anything going through the air or with other people's feet, you're going to have a hard time convincing that Texas defense to cover anybody but your best asset, which is Cam Scataboo.
Yeah,
right. I'm going to go ahead and say that Texas wins this one probably more handily than I would like. I'm going to say something like 38-17.
Okay.
So I would love for ASU to prove me wrong, though. I could see in an alternate universe, I could also very much guess that ASU comes out, punches them in the mouth. Which, if ASU's going to win, I think that's what they have to do, is come out early and like really out-physical Texas. And, you know, maybe they win a good game, 28-17, something like that. But
this is,
I think, like I said, 38-17 for Texas is what's going
to
go down on my score sheet here.
So Texas is favored by 12.5 per DraftKings. I will say this is just one of those stupid stats that's fun to talk about and it doesn't actually mean anything. But the couple of teams that Cam Scataboo has struggled against in the run this year, they were both early in the season, but they were both teams from Texas. So, you never know.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. But what's next? Is it Ohio State, Oregon, or is it Notre Dame, Georgia?
Yes. No, the next game is, in my mind, the true college football final.
Okay.
In the eighth seeded, which is ridiculous, by the way, the eighth seeded Ohio State Buckeyes versus the number one seeded Oregon Ducks. I will definitely be wearing green for this game.
Yeah.
It's my new favorite color because I'm obsessed with the Masters right now. And also, I think the Ducks are... for me, it's like a legacy Pac-12 win in my mind.
Yeah. You know
what I mean? It's something we've been pulling for the last, 10 years with the college football playoff. We've been hoping for more parity. Yes, they're all going to laud this as a Big Ten title championship if one of these two teams wins it. But in my mind, if Oregon goes home with the trophy, I mean, that's as good as anything for me for a Pac-12, a legacy Pac-12 championship.
So, yeah. Funnily enough.
Yeah, what are your thoughts?
So, funnily enough, the Buckeyes are favored by 2.5 per DraftKings. Mm-hmm. This is a crazy game. I think these really are just like, I think Ohio State's defense is like truly elite. They are so good.
Yeah.
And I think they're out of the spotlight because Ohio State's traditionally an offensive team, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I am having a hard time deciding who's going to win this because I think it's kind of a bummer that this is not at least a semifinal.
Yeah.
But
they really do. We talked about this last week. Sorry to cut you off. Go ahead and finish your thought.
Well, I was just going to say the fact is Ohio State's great. Dillon Gabriel is awesome. Oregon's good. Oregon's great as well. They haven't lost a game all year. Originally, I went with Ohio State when I kind of like filled out my bracket, and I kind of my head mm-hmm. thinks that is what's going to happen is they're going to win a close one. But I have to go with Oregon because the Ducks, baby, the Ducks.
You love Ducks.
I do love Ducks. You love Ducks. And I love Oregon's uniform thing, and I love their color. Well, I don't like their like mainly yellow featured colors, but I love the green. And I
do you know just, what they're planning on wearing this weekend?
Yeah,
this
week? It is green. I think it's green and white.
Okay.
Very cool. They posted something about it, but College Football Insiders has Oregon with a 55% chance to win at a projected score of 23-21. But like I said, Ohio State is favored by DraftKings. And I think most other betting sites, but I'm going to say Oregon wins 27-24, kind of against the grain of what I'm feeling. So anyway,
yeah. If I had to pick, I'm going to make two picks for this game, both because I think Oregon's offense is elite. They're high powered. They can run the ball. They can throw the ball. They've got a great quarterback at the helm who's got great leadership skills. He makes pretty good decisions. He's got 6 interceptions on the year. He's got almost 3,600 yards passing on the year. Almost he's a couple hundred yards shy of 4,000. If he goes all the way to the college football, even if he goes through the semifinal, he will eclipse 4,000 yards passing, which is just truly amazing.
Yeah, that's awesome.
They have almost a 1,300 yard rusher. In Jordan James, number 20, and I think their offense is very, very highly powered. Ohio State has this really amazing freshman, Jeremiah Smith, who has amassed a little shy of 1,100 yards receiving on the year. Will Howard himself is no chump, except for when he decides to slide when the clock is running out with no timeouts. against Oregon. I think this is going to be a very emotional game. I think, again, this is not any sort of analysis-based assessment. This is just the feeling of fate and how fandom usually goes for me. I think Oregon maybe wins this game by more than we'd like. I think they win it probably 28, 14, something like that, 28-11.
Really? Oregon, 28-14, huh?
Yeah. Yep.
I thought you were going to say Ohio State, so.
Oh, no, sorry. I meant to say Ohio State.
Oh,
okay. Ohio State, 28-14. But my heart, I would love in my heart of hearts to see if Oregon plays the game I know they can play. I could see this also being a very high-powered game offensively for both teams, something that goes along the lines of, like, you know, 42-35 or something like that.
Okay.
I'm kind of sitting the fence on both sides of this discussion.
But, I feel you, man. I'm torn too.
I am pulling very hard for Oregon. I will say this, though, the comment I was going to make a couple minutes ago. You know, you sent me a message earlier that apparently there are in-depth talks already about eliminating the idea that the highest-ranked conference champions get the four bye weeks, the four bye games. I think that's a mistake. I think what they should do is your highest-ranked conference champions get the bye week. I think you should be rewarded for that. I think conference championships are important.
They need to mean something.
It maintains the integrity of the game. I think getting rid of conference championships is like, then why even have conferences at all? Do you know what I mean? Like, if you're not trying to determine who's the best in your conference, why even have a conference at all?
Yeah.
But what they should do, definitely, is they need to reseed. Okay? I think Boise and ASU, I think, and even, gosh, even Georgia, I think they earned their bye week. But I think it's a travesty that we're getting probably the best game of the year in the second round of the playoff. I think it should be something more along the lines of, you know, Oregon versus Penn State, probably, or Oregon versus Notre Dame. And then it should be Ohio State versus either Notre Dame or Penn State. In my mind, you know, Georgia is not the number two seed. They're the number three or four seed. You know, you should be having, you know, Georgia, Arizona State, something like that. Maybe, you know, Texas versus Boise State, something like that. And you should be having Ohio State and Oregon be playing either Notre Dame or Penn State. Just because that's what the true, you know, 1-8 matchup should be.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I'm a huge fan of the NFL playoffs, but I think I actually disagree in this one. I think there's something really fun about, like, March Madness and other tournaments to have, like, that's kind of what makes part of it exciting. I understand the frustration that it's like, this should be the championship game, but I think that's just something that's ingrained in college football because for so long it was, we're going to have a committee of people or the computer pick what they deem
pick
the two
who
best
gets
teams
to play it. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I'm kind of like,
yeah, I agree.
Let's let the games, but I wouldn't be like upset if they did do reseeding, but there, so I think the committee's going the opposite way and they're thinking, oh, we want Ohio State, Oregon to be a semifinal or a final matchup. So that's why we're not going to guarantee the conference championship winners bye weeks anymore. And it's like, well, you know, I guess pick in my mind, pick your poison is the wrong phrase, but it's, I guess, preference, you know? And so for me, I think it's fine the way it is. And, like it, but I guess I wouldn't be totally upset with your way. I'd probably be more upset with what the committee's thinking than I would be with your, you've proposed. So, anyway, final game, 7-seed Notre Dame versus 2-seed Georgia in the Sugar Bowl. Georgia is favored by 1 per DraftKings, and this is a very tight game, and I'm very excited for this one. Notre Dame's
this
defense.
This is probably the second game that I'm most excited for this weekend.
Yeah, I actually think this is the one I'm most excited for personally because I like. I mean, Ohio State, Oregon's the easy answer, but there's something about like the way Notre Dame's playing right now and the very close line. I'm really excited about it. Notre Dame isn't as strong at run defense as they are at everything else. And Georgia's pretty good at running the ball, but they're not necessarily elite. And their starting quarterback is out. And so I'm just like,
yeah, That stands out to me a lot.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that stands out to me is you look at Georgia's last two games they've played. They had an overtime game, a draining overtime game against Texas. And then the week before that,
a six overtime.
They had an eight overtime
game
against Georgia Tech. Granted, they've had some time to relax since. I guess they've had almost as much time off as Boise State has. But, you know, eight overtimes followed by another overtime game. Just mentally speaking, and then, like you mentioned, not having your starting quarterback, you've got to have a little bit of doubt in there. Like, hey, we've sneaked out two of the last two games, you know. How much confidence do you have right now in your ability to go out there and dominate a football game when it's taken everything you've had, everything you've got, to sneak out the last two wins? I'll be interested to see. I really hope that Notre Dame can come out and punch Georgia in the mouth. I think, again, that's what's going to be required of them. I think that they have kind of a looming history of really underperforming and not showing up mentally or emotionally for these games, these big, you know, college football games. They've been in a lot of these college football playoffs since 2014, and they have consistently underperformed. I don't know if they've ever, well, no, they haven't ever won any of the semifinals that they've been in, right? Because I haven't seen them in the college football playoff.
I think they've been twice or maybe three times. The one that stands out to me was they got, like, just absolutely wrecked by Clemson. I think it was 31-3.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, that's bad. So, I don't know. For me, so I don't know, because Georgia's Georgia, but at the same time I look and I'm like, I guess I just, I don't know. We'll see. But I'm taking the Irish in a tight one. I'm saying they win 24-23. Yeah. College Football Insiders has Notre Dame with a 51% chance to win. Basically, mm-hmm. It's like it's their margin is actually like 25.8 points to Notre mm-hmm. Dame and like 25.3 points to Georgia. So, but I'm going to go 24-23 Notre Dame, and the Irish finally get that signature win.
24-23. That's bold. I like that. Yeah, I'm going to go with something very, very close like that as well. You know, I'd say it's, yeah, probably very near in that area. I'd say, yeah, I'll go really close to yours. I'll go 28-27.
So Notre Dame winning or Georgia?
Notre Dame.
Let's go, yeah. Baby.
Yeah, yeah. Again, I fear, just because I'm rooting for Notre Dame, that they will lose. not as a superstition. I hate superstition in sports, but just because that's the way the cookie crumbles.
You're a little stitious, right?
And so often, I'm a little stitious. I'm not superstitious, but I am a little stitious. I should say I'm superstitious with my fandom, but if I were like ever in charge of athletes, if I were ever a coach or a trainer, I guess I am a physical therapist, so I'm not superstitious at all with my patients. I think the superstition is dumb when it comes to affecting people's outcomes. Why give them something extra to focus on? But, however, as a fan, you know, I'm kind of like you, where it's like, oh, I want Georgia to lose, ergo they will probably win.
Well, we'll see. We got a nice couple of days ahead of us.
We really hope not. So, yeah. Okay, that is all the games for this coming week. I will try my very, very best to get this edited and posted tonight so that folks have a chance to listen to this tomorrow during the day on during New Year's Eve day in preparation for the VRBO Fiesta Bowl at 5:30 Mountain Time.
All right.
Do you have anything else, Dion?
No, just Happy New Year.
Okay. And then, just by way of kind of our plan for the rest of the year, BYU and Utah have finished their season. I think what we're going to plan on doing is doing an episode next week, or maybe the week after that. We'll have to talk and see what we want to do, where we will review both the University of Utah's football season for 2024 and the Cougars' 2024 season as well, just kind of a whole year summary, and we'll chat about next year maybe a little bit, and then we'll do a little bit of a preview for the college football championship game. So be on the lookout for those episodes. Again, we thank you guys, for those of you that do listen to us. We know we can go on and on, but we really like doing this. We like chatting with you guys. We like helping you understand more about the game of college football and helping you kind of prepare to your scouting report for your teams week in and week out. So we thank you guys. We love you guys. Thank you for an amazing 2024. We will see you guys on the flip-flop later.
I love you.